Good day, everyone. This is Wednesday, December the 19th, year 2012. This is a session for the Ontolog PSMW, the Purple Semantic Media Wiki debut. And it's also going to be a tutorial session and a discussion session for potentials and possibilities. I'm Peter Yim, co-convener of Ontolog, and also I work for CIM3, who provides the CIM3.net infrastructure that hosts most of the collaborative work environment for the Ontolog community. With us today are two invited speakers, Professor Ken Bukowski, and from Northeastern University, and Yaron Koren from WikiWorks. So if people would go to the slide that says zero chair, I will move on to slide number two now. So as a background, I would start with giving people a little bit of background on Ontolog, since we have a few people who are not from the immediate community with us today. And then we'll go to quickly to the invited presentations, and after that we'll have a discussion, and hopefully we'll have at least like 20-30 minutes of that, and then do a wrap up and next steps. Next slide, slide number three. So Ontolog is a community of practice. Other people call us Ontolog Forum, because that was the name of our mailing list, and also that subscribers to that mailing list delineates who is or is not a quote unquote registered member of the Ontolog Forum, of the Ontolog community. So we are also known as Ontolog Forum. And if people would go to the current wiki site, near the top, there's Ontolog in one slide. I won't go into the slide now, but it looks something like this. That tells people about Ontolog. We were established more than 10 years ago. We now have close to 1,000 members from over 30 countries, with registered members on the Ontolog forum list, but we run other listservs as well, like the announcement list and so on, and there are over 2,700 of them. So back to the slides. It's an open virtual community of practice, and this is a community who's doing all volunteer work and trying to move ontology and semantic technology into the mainstream through adoption in applications, as well as trying to get it into international standards. Interestingly enough, members engage in Ontolog community activities in rather distinct modus operandi, and there are several sort of major pockets, obviously a bit of overlap, but I mean, you can see a whole bunch of people are very passionate about exchanging on the mailing list. Then there are a huge number of contribution by people giving talks and joining us in panel discussions, which happens quite a few times a year. I would say arguably almost one every week. I mean, we easily run like 40 to 50 panel sessions like today's in a year. That's another mode. Yet a third mode is, I mean, there are members who don't engage that much in either of these activities, but are involved in projects. Like, I mean, there are projects that are spun off which are actually independent, but being incubated or hosted on the Ontolog community collaborative environment. There are projects like OOR, the Open Ontology Repository, maybe other projects like ISO Onto IOP, the Ontology Integration and Interoperability Standards Development Group, more recently the Common Logic Revision 2 Working Group, and so on. I mean, you hardly hear some of those people on the mailing list, but then, I mean, they're extremely active. And there are also other groups who are being hosted on Ontolog as well, that would include groups like the Open Areas for the IAOA, the International Association for Ontologies and its applications. If we go slightly broader to the CIM3.net infrastructure, we are fairly happy to be the host for a lot of other ontology related activities and services as well. Some of you might know, others don't. For example, we host all the Protégé archives, the older versions of the Protégé's program downloads for the Stanford BMIR. We've been hosting for, I would say, close to 10 years now, the Sumo Sigma Knowledge Engineering Environment, and so on. So it comes down to Ontolog thriving on this, what we call the collaborative working environment, which is made up of a website, like everybody else's website, a forum workspace, which we use as a conversation space, a cloud storage that is used as a shared file repository, and last, but probably most importantly, is wiki space. So going on to slide 4, we will be looking at the wiki space in particular, and the focus of today's invited presentations are all on Ontolog's wiki platform. Of course, now our Ontolog wiki serves as a collaborative authoring space, workspace for us. It serves as a content archival space for us, which actually is the front to some very rich, metadata-rich content that represents the community's body of knowledge. And the wiki serves as that shared presentation space. All said, up to now, we have rich metadata-rich content, but we don't have semantic technology to access those up to now, and it's going to change. And today is the debut of the Ontolog Purple Semantic Media Wiki, where we make a first step towards capitalizing on those semantically rich content. And this Purple Semantic Media Wiki is going to be the workspace that we will hopefully be working with. So without further ado, I will like to introduce the two two talks. The first one will be by Professor Bukowski, entitled Transitioning to a Semantic Collaboration Environment. And after Ken, Yaron Koren, I would say arguably the most productive and prolific developer in the semantic media, the media wiki extension space, Mr. Yaron Koren from WikiWorks, who will give a talk on semantic media wiki and the semantic bundle. This will be sort of in the form of a tutorial after the long-awaited work that he has just completed last month, the book called entitled Working with Media Wiki, which I would highly recommend to everyone. So, before we... So this is it. As a debut, our current wiki, the Ontolog wiki, is at ontolog.sim3.net/wiki, and so meet our new Ontolog PSMW at ontolog-o2.sim3.net/wiki. This, of course, at this point, will be a beta for now. So I will bring up Professor Bukowski's slides, so if people would click on one Bukowski, and I will turn this over to Ken.
Thanks, Peter. So, as Peter explained, we're now in the process of transitioning to this new semantic collaborative work environment for the Ontolog community. So if you go to my second slide, slide two, just a brief overview of what we're looking at today in our Ontolog wiki. It's based on a wiki called PurpleWiki, which is a collaborative work environment that has fine-grained access to wiki content. That's the purple part. And it has nice features like transclusion, which is to say inclusion by reference. So text in one page can be seen in another page without having to click on it to go to that other page. Now, the Ontolog wiki has a lot of content, and it's very highly linked, so it's a fairly sophisticated environment already. But as Peter's pointed out, it doesn't have support for semantics or ontologies, and being an ontology community, we certainly would like to have that. Also, the engine that we're using, although it's a very effective engine, is slightly dated and reaching the limit, some of the limits that we're encountering at this point. So if we move on to slide three, so we have a kind of wish list for what we would like for a wiki. We would like to use a platform that is more actively supported and more popular so that we can make use of the activities and the contributions from other individuals. We would like, of course, to have semantics and ontologies. And we would like to have the fine-grained access that we have now and the transclusion that we have now. And we would also like to migrate the existing content rather than simply starting from scratch. That is a challenge because these two wikis are rather different, as we're going to see. Also, it'd be really nice to have some extendability, and the wiki extensions that Yaron will be talking about later are certainly very important, semantic media wiki extensions. So all of those are the things that we would like to have. Well, if you go to slide four, see in our transition from Ontolog wiki to Ontolog Purple Semantic Media Wiki, we think that we're going to be able to support all of these. So it will be a collaborative work platform, MediaWiki. It is the most popular wiki software. It's a software for Wikipedia. It's very actively supported. The semantics is provided by Semantic Media Wiki that Jeroen will be telling you more about, and I'll also give you some brief introduction. This is the most popular semantic wiki platform today. And there's also some support for ontologies that I'll be talking about. It's a template and form-based approach to ontologies. Finally, we're going to have the axis and transclusion features that we, well, MediaWiki already supports this at a coarse granularity, and then the purple numbers will support it at a finer granularity. Finally, the migration of existing content will be, is now being done by one of my former students, Tejas Parikh, who's done a marvelous job. He's been just working very hard to get all of the existing content into this new environment. And it's very extendable. There's a growing list of Semantic Media Wiki plugins. And hopefully, as we get into the new Purple Semantic Media Wiki, members of our Ontolog community will also be contributing new plugins as well as content. So moving on to slide 5, what is Purple Semantic Media Wiki? Well, it's a bundle of Media Wiki plugins that support the semantic and fine-grained axis. The semantics is available from, well, basically think of it as RDF triples or linked to open data, and Jeroen will be giving you more details about that. And the ontologies can be mapped to Semantic Media Wiki, and I'll talk about that where we use templates and form for this purpose. The homepage for the project, for the Purple Semantic Media Wiki project, that developed this bundle is on that page. It's there's a link there to this project. Moving on to slide 6. Now, how do you transition to this new environment? The purple numbers are a little different from the current one in that they're hierarchical rather than just being just nodes. And one difference is that they won't appear when one is editing a page. I'll show that in a moment. Also, you can hide the purple numbers so that you don't see them on the page. But when you mouse over them, you will see the purple numbers reappear. Table of contents entries can also be used for links and transclusion. And these mimic the purple numbers that we have on the current Ontolog Wiki, which are non-hierarchical. And transclusion is now a bit more sophisticated in that you have current versions as well as specified versions of the page. You can use purple numbers or the table of contents entries. More about the semantics will be covered by your own in a moment. Then I move to slide 7. I have a screenshot of the meeting page, today's meeting page, and if you look at that meeting page on slide 7, or you just go to that, just go to our meeting page, you will see what the purple numbers look like. So we have, for example, 3JJP, 3JJQ, and I'm sure you've been used to seeing that now from the various meetings of the Ontolog forum. Moving on to slide 8, you can see what it looks like when you're editing one of those pages. So you see, it's on slide 8, right at the top there, editing conference call. And then it says, Ontolog PSMW debut tutorial and possibilities. And then it gives the date. Oops, it should have been Wednesday. Sorry about that. And then, but the important thing is look right here and you'll see NID 3JJP. So you see the purple number right there, when you're editing. Okay, so that's going to be different because they're not going to be there on the page in the new environment. Okay, so then moving on to slide 9, here is what the new environment will look like. So that's the same conference call page. It's now, as you, for those of you who are familiar with Wikipedia and other media wiki, sites, you'll see that it's a rather different style. But it has the same content, and you'll notice that it has purple numbers. So we have purple numbers 1, 1A, 1B, 1C, and you'll notice there that it is hierarchical. As you go down to different levels, you're going to have, for example, 1C1 and 1CA1 and so on as you get into deeper and deeper hierarchical levels. So if you go to that page that whose link is there, you can just scan down and look at the whole page and get some idea of what it's going to look like. And notice it has a table of contents now, which you can hide. And you can hide the purple numbers, so you might want to try doing that. And in the table of contents now can be used in much the same way that you use the purple numbers that we have in the current Ontolog wiki for doing transclusion or links. So moving on to page slide 10, now you can see what it looks like when you're editing this page. You'll notice that the purple numbers aren't there. Okay, so purple numbers are actually computed when the page is rendered rather than being on the page as it was before. So that is a difference. And there's also other differences because we're now using the formatting conventions of MediaWiki rather than PurpleWiki. So moving on to slide 11, we really would like people to give us ideas and suggestions, to give us issues to contribute to this. I have a couple of links there. One of them is a link to a site where you can put your demos, prototypes, and examples, the kinds of things that you'd like to give to the community, extending the environment that we have. The second link there is migration issues, bugs, and suggestions. So migration is going to be a problem because of the two very different environments, and Tejas is working hard on this. As you notice issues, find some bugs, please just put them on that page so that they can be addressed. And hopefully this migration will be able to go smoothly to the new environment. There's also a link there for statistics. They'll show you some idea of what's happening in our migration process. And slide 12, a little discussion of exactly how ontologies fit into all of this. How does one map an ontology to this environment? Well, in MediaWiki, you have a notion of categories, and you can classify pages within these categories. So that's a notion here of a class. So each page then can be an instance of one of the classes represented as a category. Properties of a category are specified with templates, and I'll show you an example in a moment. And forms are used to populate these classes for data entry and display. So you get forms actually could use one or more templates. They're not actually specifically for one template, but when we generate these from an ontology, we actually generate, for each class, we get one category, one template, and one form. Applications use queries, and Yaron will be telling you more about that. And it is possible it is actually possible to use Sparkle if you have, when we have our a triple store set up for the Ontolog PSNW. The initial ontology that we're mapping in is the Oasis ICOM, which is specifically for collaborative work, and so it seemed a natural fit. The ICOM is in the process of being made into a standard. And Yaron will be giving you more details about Semantic Media Wiki. So then I'll end this by just giving you an example of a mapping of the ontology to Purple Semantic Media Wiki. The example here is the access control list from ICOM. And then the one of the properties of this is the access control entry. So that's a property of this class. And that property is a set of access control entry objects. So then, and then additionally, you'll have a property called object, which is, and its property is, gives you an entity object. For simplicity, I haven't shown the style information. The actual template will have a number of things, a number of stylistic things to, for the, to show you what, how the page is to be rendered. But the semantic part, right, the part that captures the ontology is shown there, where you have access control entry, which is multi-valued. So you see how that, see how it specifies a multi-valued property. And then a single-valued property, object, is also shown there. So I just wanted to give you an example of how you'd represent multi-valued properties and single-valued properties. So then on slide, so that was slide 13, now we'll move on to slide 14, show you how the form and category pages that are associated with this class look like. There's a form, that's a form for doing data entry, and then you see a form for basically documentation about this category, and with a link to be able to create a new instance of this category. This, we would think of it as a as an instance of a class. Then moving on to slide 15, you can see this is what you would actually see when you look at this form. So you see the form for entering data. In this case, it's entering the properties of this new object, which are called ACL1. So I created a new object in this class, and it gives me the ability to specify its properties. And of course, you can change those properties later. This is just the data entry form for the for this. So this gives you an idea of the relationship between ontologies and Semantic Media Wiki. Yaron will be giving you more details. This is just an introduction to kind of whet your appetite, get you going to see the ontologies in action in this new environment. Then moving on to slide 16 now, a little example application to show you what we can do, what one can do with this. We're hoping that there will be more of these. This is a calendar application. It is based on ICOM, the OASIS Integrated Collaboration Object Model for Interoperable Collaboration Services. For the there you can actually go online. You can go click on this link here. I believe that link should be active right now. In any case, it'll show you what that calendar looks like. Even if that doesn't quite work, it doesn't matter. Slide 17 will actually show you what it what you'll see. This, the first part there shows you the query for the, that produces this, this page. And the second part of the slide shows you what the page then looks like. That's just a screenshot illustrating how you can build your, application semantically by combining a query with a format, which then maps. So basically you map the, properties of this class, of this of instance of this class, to the format. And there's a very nice, quite a variety of formats that Neuron will be talking about. Many, many of them actually are, were developed by him. So he will definitely give you a lot of insight into this in the talk that's going to follow very shortly. And then I'll end just with, some acknowledgements. A lot of people have been involved in development of Semantic Media Wiki, the Semantic Media Wiki extensions, the Purple Semantic Media Wiki, the migration to this new environment. the calendar application that I just showed you, and many other contributors who have participated in this effort. This is by no means a complete list. I mean, the many, many more contributors to Semantic Media Wiki and the extensions. This is just some of the individuals that have been involved. It's a very big effort. Finally, on slide 19 and 20, a little history and some links and citations about purple numbers. These go back really far. They go back to Doug Engelbart's Mother of All Demos and have been developed over the years and has been a part of what we've been doing in the Ontolog Wiki since Peter and others began Ontolog many years ago. Okay, so this will give you an introduction to the transition. Now I'd like to move over to switch over to Yaron, who will then give you more details.
Okay, great. I guess I should just start?
Yes,
yeah,
please.
So start.
Okay, great. Thanks, Ken, and thanks, Peter, for that nice introduction. And thank both of you for the introduction. My name is Yaron Koren. First of all, I apologize for I don't think I put numbers on my slides. No, I didn't put numbers on my slides.
If you download the deck.
Oh, okay. I thought I would take some time by just using my own, but I should use the.
Download right. The one from the page.
Okay. Let me see. Actually, at some point during Ken's talk, my connection dropped out, which was bad. I hope that won't happen during my talk, but if it does, I apologize in advance. Okay, let's start. I didn't actually, my other apologies, I didn't actually time my talk or anything, so it could go well under or well over. I mean, I'll fit it within 45 minutes, but, we'll see how it goes.
Don't worry. So you're
okay. Okay, great. My talk is titled Semantic Media Wiki and the Semantic Bundle. I don't know how much people already know about Media Wiki. I essentially don't have anything about Media Wiki per se, but I can, I'll try to explain concepts as they come up, and I can certainly answer questions afterwards. I guess we're on slide 2 now. Yeah. I'm a MediaWiki developer and consultant. I started working with MediaWiki and Semantic MediaWiki in 2006, based in New York City. I run a consulting company called WikiWorks. And through WikiWorks, I run a wiki farm called Referata. It lets people create their own MediaWiki and Semantic MediaWiki-based wikis, and you can do it for free. It's very easy to do if you want to try out any of this stuff. That's a good place to try it out, Referata. And then, as mentioned, I wrote a book that just recently came out, thankfully, called Working with MediaWiki. And that book, it's meant as a general MediaWiki reference guide, but it has a lot of content specific to Semantic MediaWiki. Slide 3. MediaWiki, if you haven't heard of it, it's open source. It's best known for running Wikipedia, and that's how almost everyone first encounters it and encounters the look and feel of it. And it's probably the single most popular engine for regular wikis. And you can find out a lot more about it at MediaWiki.org. Slide 4. MediaWiki has a lot of extensions. It has hundreds, maybe even over 1,000, but definitely maybe around 100 active ones at the moment. Semantic MediaWiki is a popular one and a very powerful one that basically it lets you store text as data and then query it within the wiki. or outside of the wiki. So I like to think of it as turning a wiki into a collaborative database, meaning it has all the nice features of, structure and queryability and all that of a database, but you can open it up and let everyone collaborate on it together, on the content. The homepage is at semantic-mediawiki.org, and there's a whole lot of documentation there. Just one thing, it's, it's a mouthful. People just call it SMW for short. Some people call it semantic or semantic wiki, but those both mean something else. That's incorrect. Just a little pet peeve of mine. So let's get, right to it. Slide 5. There's some of this syntax in Ken's talk. Actually, I think Ken's talk, had more syntax than mine does. So you can refer back to that one for some of this stuff. This is sort of the hello world of Semantic Media Wiki. You have a page called Susie's Shoes about a shoe store. You want to store the phone number, so that's the syntax you would use in the simplest case. I'm hoping everyone here knows, about semantic web and triples and all of that. The data is stored as a semantic triple, meaning subject, predicate, or relationship, object, and that is what is stored behind the scenes. By Semantic Media Wiki when you have a tag like that. So has phone number, that middle thing is referred to in SMW terms as the property. Okay, slide 6. Once you have data stored, then the obvious thing is being able to query it. There are actually two what are known as parser functions. MediaWiki has a lot of functionality, coding style functionality, and that's generally done in the form of parser functions with syntax like what you see there. So ask is the important one, really. In this case, this little bit of code means find all the pages that are tagged as being in category stores, and then show their name and also show this additional property for each one. So I don't actually have a diagram of what this would show, but basically imagine a two-column table, the first holding the names of all the different stores, and each one is a wiki page, and the second would have a phone number, or blank if there isn't one associated with that page. What else? Oh, yeah, okay. Slide 7. So then show is just a simple one. It's really not used that often, but the basic idea is you want to just display a single value instead of aggregating, you can use it for that. You just want to show, in this case, a single phone number. Slide 8. Actually, that's the standard case, and that's often used to demonstrate Semantic Media Wiki on the Wikipedia article about SMW and various other places. But in fact, that is rarely done. As Ken noted before, data is usually stored via templates. And that's how it's going to be done on the Ontolog Wiki as well. You can think of templates as macros. It's basically a template is its own wiki page. It's defined via a page on the wiki. and basically, when you have a template page on a wiki, that's a set of instructions or a set of text that for what to do, how to display a certain set of parameters. That probably sounded more complicated than it actually is. Basically, you can have a call, if your template is called template name, it's going to take a certain number of parameters. And then when you call it elsewhere in the wiki, you pass into each parameter a value. And then that template does whatever it's supposed to do with those values. So before I get to the next slide, the easiest place to see templates is almost any article on Wikipedia. There's the info box on the upper right hand side. If you're looking at the English Wikipedia, it's on the right. And each of those info boxes is done via template. The basic idea is it gets a certain set of values, usually one value per row of that info box, and then has a display. So I would urge anyone who's confused at this point to just look on Wikipedia, just almost any article, and check out the info box, and that may hopefully shed some light on it. So slide 9, why use templates? For three reasons, or why use templates with Semantic Media Wiki as opposed to just storing all the data, within free text, as I originally showed in that first example. The first thing is it just makes it easier to handle the storing of data. You don't need to do all that semantic tagging and all of that. You just pass in a set of parameters or a set of values, like we saw in slide 8. The second is it handles the display. It makes for a consistent display of data, which is nice. So as with the first thing, you don't have to worry about tagging. You don't have to worry about figuring out the display and the syntax for setting that display. And the third, which might be the most important, is it standardizes a set of data for each page type. So you don't have to constantly think, oh, this is a page about stores. Should I put in, the address, and in what format should the address be, and should I put in, the items on sale and all that? You just go based on what the template allows. But of course, since it's a wiki, you can change the underlying template as well, and you can, have a discussion about that. But, whatever the template holds at the moment is what, the wiki deems to be the right set of data for that page. Okay, so slide 10. So here's an example of what the page called Susie's Shoes might actually look like. You can see there's no semantic tagging on here. There's just a call to a template called store, and then a set of the parameters and their values for this specific page. There's some extra spaces in there that shouldn't be there, but it doesn't matter. This would work. And then below that, you have the free text, which is ideally non-semantic, which just holds, any amount of text and images, etc., relating to that page. Slide 11. So this, now we're already getting pretty deep into the concept here, but one thing that's important is knowing about compound data, which you can also think of as just two-dimensional data, any sort of data that would go into a table on a page. So for instance, Susie's Shoes is open on Monday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. We have that piece of information. You can't store that unless you do a hack. You can't store that using regular properties, because it's just it's more than a single value that's being stored here. It's there's a qualifier to that information that it's specific to Monday. Normally on a page you would have a table of information, one row for each day and that sort of thing. So basically, that's done in Semantic Media Wiki using subobjects. There actually is a separate extension called Semantic or Internal Objects, which I'll list briefly a few slides for now. But at this point, since I guess a few weeks ago, Semantic Media Wiki handles that well on its own. So that other extension is no longer needed. So slide 12 now. Not to belabor the point, but this is what a call to subobject, the parser function called subobject, would look like. As you can see, there's a way to store a specific combination of properties and their values. Basically, each call to a subject you can think of as defining a single row of a table. But again, this is, a free form call to sub object, which probably wouldn't be the case. It too would be stored via templates. And you really don't have to worry about all this stuff. But basically, you'd have the way it would be done would most likely have the main store template. And just to clarify, that store here means like a store where you go shopping and not storage of data. Maybe I should have picked an example that was less syntactically ambiguous. So you'd have all that those other standard parameters above it, phone number and all that, and then you'd have a parameter called hours that itself took in an arbitrary number of calls to this specific template. So this one parameter essentially defines a table of data with one template for each row, and then that template hours for day would hold a call to sub object. Now you notice there aren't any parameter names in this template. I did that just to take up less space on the page. But when you define a template, you can define it either way. Either parameters are defined by a name or just by their index, their number within the template call. So in this case, you would define it by saying the first parameter is the day of the week. The second one is the start day, start time, etc. I think that's pretty much what needs to be said about NRE / compound / two-dimensional data / sub-objects, formerly also known as internal objects, but let's forget about that. Slide 13. Since we're talking to the audience here is a lot of semantic web people, I wanted to note that you can configure Semantic Media Wiki to store its data in an RDF triple store, like the ones I have listed here, and I assume the people here generally know what those are. There was actually, Ken said that Semantic Media Wiki data is queried via Sparkle, but actually that's usually not the case. Usually the data is just stored in a database. It's entered the SQL database, almost always MySQL. And then behind the scenes, when Semantic Media Wiki processes a query, that ask parser function, it just does SQL queries. However, you can configure it if you have an RDF triple store, you can configure it to store it within that, and then I'm pretty sure it uses Sparkle. But that's definitely something that we, the Semantic Media Wiki community would like to see and expect to see more of in the future is usage of RDF and Sparkle, because it has a number of advantages. The key one being, of course, that you can query it remotely and query it in combination with other data sources. So that actually ties into the next slide, slide 14. Semantic Media Wiki and Wikidata. This is a question that I expect to get a lot more of in the future once Wikidata comes out. I don't know if people here, everyone here has heard of it. It's an ongoing project now. It started in April 2012 and is expected to end in April 2013. It's really an amazing project. I think it has world-changing implications. The basic idea is it provides a giant data store for Wikipedia. So it's semantic and it's wiki-based or media wiki-based. So people have already started to confuse it and Semantic Media Wiki. They do have some shared code, or it's planned, I should say, that they will have some shared code. There's an effort right now to spin off the shared elements of both into a single library that will be used by both. And a lot of the developers are the same. Denny Brandicich, who's one of the authors, the original authors of Semantic Media Wiki, is in charge of the Wikidata project. But they are two different software projects. Wikidata is both the site and the software powering it, although that one is actually, the software is actually referred to as Wikibase. But anyway, that's intended for massive multilingual wikis, of which there aren't many, but Wikipedia is an obvious one. And, you know, it's everything about it is structured for that. But if you're running a regular size single language wiki or even one that has, you know, just two or three languages, Semantic Media Wiki is the way to go. But really the way in which Wikidata will be important is just in terms of being a standard semantic, a standard new addition to the linked data world, the semantic web world. They haven't done any work on making the data available via RDF, but I assume once it's actually out and ready to go, it'll be just a matter of time before someone creates RDF endpoints to it, Sparkle endpoints to it, a la DBpedia, which is a similar thing that exists now, although Wikidata is going to be a lot bigger than that. And that's going to be great for the semantic web in general to have that kind of resource. I have the same slide twice. Okay, well, so that was slide 14 and slide 15 that I just covered. Sorry about that. Slide 16. Okay, so now we've gotten Semantic Media Wiki out of the way. Semantic Bundle, it's a specific package that I help to maintain of extensions. It's useful first in that it's a nice way to just download a bunch of stuff together quickly, especially if you don't have Git, which is the version control system that MediaWiki uses for itself and all of its extensions. Besides that, it's also nice because it represents my own view and the view of some of the other people who work on this stuff of what, you know, the ideal set of extensions to be that should be used together with Semantic Media Wiki. It's helpful to just think of things that way in terms of that package, because there's no nice way of referring to that set of extensions other than Semantic Bundle. So slide 17 now. Here's a list of some, I guess most, of the extensions in Semantic Bundle. I'm only going to cover a few of these, basically just the left-hand column. A lot of the extensions in Semantic Bundle are not semantic, but many of the non-semantic ones were designed with Semantic Media Wiki in mind and are especially useful for wikis that use it and have that sort of structured approach to data. So maybe I should just, it looks like I have a little bit of time. I'll just go briefly over the ones that I'm not covering here, which is all the right-hand side. External data is an interesting one. I originally created it, although a lot of people have added on elements to it. It basically lets you display data from other sources within the wiki. It lets you query web pages that are in a structured form like CSV or JSON. It lets you query a database, assuming you have a working login to it, and that's handled securely behind the scenes. An LDAP server, I think those are the big three. It doesn't handle RDF and Sparkle. There are other tools for that. So basically the idea is it's a lightweight way of, say, getting information from an API or a database that's specific to that page. So it lets the wiki serve as a kind of information hub. If you have other data sources, it lets the wiki be a single place where you can ideally view everything. Data transfer just lets you import and export data out of the wiki in XML or CSV form. Approved revs is a sort of like a lightweight version control system for the wiki. There's a much more heavyweight one called flagged revs, otherwise known as the and that's the one used on Wikipedia. It's just a bit too complex and heavyweight for most wikis or for a lot of wikis. So approved revs is just a nice way of saying, for this page, this revision is the approved one that should be shown to users, even though there have been later versions than that. Parser function is a very standard one that defines a lot of basic MediaWiki functionality. I won't get into it. Widgets is a nice way of being able to embed standard bits of HTML and JavaScript, like for displaying videos. That's the biggest single usage of it. Header tabs lets you place tabs on the screen, subdivide the page into tabs, which is useful when you have a lot of structured data in templates, and you can also do it within forms. That's a nice one when your page is huge and you want to separate it out into smaller bits with using tabs. Replace text as a global search and replace on the contents of a wiki. It's something that MediaWiki lacks. And it's actually it's a good example of something that's more useful when you're using semantic MediaWiki because things just have to be a lot more precise when you're using semantic MediaWiki. So for instance, if you have, if half of your pages, if your pages refer to a country and half your pages have USA on them and the other half United States, that sort of thing, and it's messing up your querying, because it looks like two different countries, then you can use replace text to easily replace one with the other in order to standardize data. And then admin links just shows a set of links. It basically provides a dashboard, which MediaWiki itself lacks, which can be useful. Okay, that was hopefully a very brief introduction to all of those. So slide 18. Let's get to the interesting stuff. Semantic results format is a nice extension that defines more complex result formats for semantic MediaWiki, like calendars, charts, graphs, iCloud, gallery, all that kind of stuff. I didn't really talk about I didn't talk at all about the result formats that MediaWiki itself defines. You can display information in tables, lists, and then bulleted list. So basically, within Semantic MediaWiki, you can do just very basic kind of display of data. But with semantic result formats, it gets a lot more interesting. So if you go to slide 19, you can see an example of a timeline. And actually, in Ken's talk, there was a he had an example of a calendar there. this is all. If you look behind the scenes of this, it's just a very simple ask query where, and this all of this data comes from actual wikis. This comes from a wiki about technical conferences, techpresentations.org. So it's just looking for pages and their start and end date, the start and end date properties they have, and constructing all this on the fly from that using a standard JavaScript library. So then if you go to slide 20, this is an example of the JQ plot bar format. It uses a graphing library called JQ plot. This is actually some some dummy data from somewhere. This isn't a real thing, but it shows you the kind of thing you can do once you have all this data. Slide 21, there are a whole lot of other formats. I just wanted to list some of the more interesting ones, in my opinion. There's Calendar. There's another one that's very similar called Event Calendar that uses JavaScript. That's a new one. So it's a little bit of a slicker display. There's one called Filtered, which is similar to Semantic Drill Down, which we'll get to later. There are a bunch of other libraries you can use besides JQPlot, although I like JQPlot. And you can do math operations, so you can have it's a quote-unquote display format where you just, you know, show the average of a set of numbers, that sort of thing. Okay, slide 22. There's a lot of cool mapping functionality which may not be all that useful for the Ontolog wiki, although you can do interesting things like if every user notes in their own page, ideally via form, where they're located, then you can have a nice map of all the users, and there's some ways to do that quite successfully. So if you go to slide 23, you can see an example of this in action. This is from openei.org. It's just, you know, this is, again, it's a map that's generated on the fly from semantic data, and it just uses Google Maps for that. Slide 24. you can. Oh yeah, sorry. Semantic maps can also display data in open layers format, which is an open source service and software, unlike Google Maps, which is proprietary, of course. Slide 24. Semantic compound queries. You can display multiple queries at the same time. In practice, that's almost always used for either maps or calendars. So here's a real life example on slide 25. This is from an airport and airline based wiki or airplane based wiki. This one shows I don't actually know what it shows. It's a set of I guess airports around that area of Africa, and different icons mean different things. I won't show, it uses a parser function called compound query, and I won't get into the details of that, but it's not that complicated. Here's another one on slide 26, which, this is from a wiki that I run, discoursedb.org. This is shows a set of recent editorials, from October, from 2 months ago. For one candidate or another in the U.S. presidential election. You can probably figure out from the colors which is which. So it's a nice way of color coding information, and that can be used in calendars for separating out meetings versus deadlines and all that sort of thing. Okay, slide 27, semantic forms. This is it's the most popular Semantic Media Wiki-based extension. I'm the main developer of it, although at this point I'm certainly not the only one. The basic idea is it lets you define forms for creating and editing the template-based wiki pages of the kind that I've been explaining. And then there's one other usage of it, which is that you can use it to run search queries also. So this is actually the most important extension, in my opinion. It's certainly the most important extension I've written. But it has the least about it in this presentation. I figured I would do a demo, but I don't know how feasible that is, given... given the whole setup that we have. I'll try to do a very short demo if people are willing to bear with me. But so before I get into that, on slide 28, you can just see the basic explanation of features, you can have a lot of input types, and those tend to correspond to how properties are defined. So, for instance, if there's a field in the template for a phone number, then chances are that it'll just have a simple text input. If that field instead were for, you know, the opening time, that sort of thing, then it would probably be a date field. And if it were instead, you know, just a set of options, I don't know if a store would be a good example. I guess, you know, the type of store, whether it's shoes or whatever else, if you had, say, a list of 30 different options, then you could use a dropdown for that, or a combo box, that sort of thing. That, you know, different things make sense for different types of data. There's auto-completion, and then other extensions can define their own input types, and the big one for that is semantic maps, which lets you use a map to enter coordinate data. Because, you know, there's basically no chance that someone will know the exact coordinates of some place that they want to enter in. Field validations, you could set certain fields to be mandatory. One other extension that defines input types is called semantic forms inputs. It's basically a catch-all extension for more complex form inputs that didn't make it into semantic forms. And the big one there is date picker, which has a JavaScript-based date input, which is just a standard thing you see on the web a lot. It's easier than just entering in a date by hand. Let's see, I have about 10 minutes left. Let me just do a very short demo here. I don't know if people are willing to go to another URL, but if you can type in, I wish I'd written this in the presentation, but if you can type in foodfinds.referrata.com here, I'm putting it on the in the conference room, foodfinds.referrata.com. Please click on that if you're in the conference. I like this one a lot as a demo because it demonstrates a few things at the same time, and it's just a subject matter that people are familiar with. So if you go there, and hopefully if you're listening to this later, the site will be up at that time. But basically, you'll see a map of just restaurants around the world. It's kind of a, you know, an arbitrary set of whatever people have added. Oh, man. It looks like there's a bug right now in... could it be? Oh, this is horrible. There's a bug right now in semantic maps. I thought this was fixed. Okay. Clicking on any of these points will bring you to a single restaurant right now. Not that it really matters, but that's quite bad. Hopefully, if you're listening to this in the future, that will no longer be the case. I'll definitely look at this later today. But anyway, whatever restaurant you go to, when you click on any point, you can see a page for that restaurant. This uses a template in order to structure the data. But the interesting thing here, the thing that's relevant to semantic forms is there's in place of a regular edit with edit tab, there's a tab that reads edit with form. Most wikis that use semantic forms will have both a regular edit tab and an edit with form tab, although this is nicer just for simplicity's sake. If you click on edit with form, you basically see, I guess, what you'd expect to see, which is there's a different form input for each of those fields. Some of these have auto-completion. The cuisine has used auto-completion. So if you type in some other term, it'll auto-complete on that, and this one actually uses a list-based auto-completion, so you can add more than one thing. Each one has its own auto-completion. The second input price range that uses a drop-down. Other ones basically, you know, geared toward that type of data. And then at the bottom, you can see a map input for entering the exact coordinates. So this wiki doesn't actually require that you be logged in. So you could actually save the page, so I wouldn't recommend it. But if you do make changes, it's interesting to just click on show changes button at the bottom and see how that impacts the actual text of the wiki page. So yeah, it's as simple as that. I mean, you make the changes, they get saved, and then anyone can just look at the history of the page to see what changes you made and when, which is just it just makes for a really easy way to collaborate on data. Because if someone, unlike with a traditional database, where if you make a change and someone disagrees with it, everyone's basically stuck. I mean, it may not be possible or at least easy to revert the change, and you might not know who made which change to which field when. Here you have an exact history of every change that was made. So that's basically it as far as forms. Forms themselves are also defined within wiki pages. I'm not going to get into that, but it's a separate page on the wiki. Ken's presentation actually had a little bit of form syntax. Although I should note, I think it was, I had made a note of it, on slide 14, there was a syntax there that showed how to link to a form, but that was actually incorrect. So basically, the key is that the syntax exists, and it's not that complicated. It's just some scripting type language that you have to learn or copy from elsewhere. Okay, so let's go back to my slides, if I can find them here. Okay, we were on slide 28. Let's go to slide 29. The one additional extension I wanted to show is semantic drill down, or just talk about. It provides a drill down interface for the data to let you filter on each property that pages hold. In the case of numbers, like the population of a country or dates, that sort of thing, you can aggregate them into buckets. So instead of filtering based on, January 1st, 2009, it would be all pages that have a value somewhere in 2009 for this field. So looking at an actual example will probably make more sense. So if you go down to slide 30, I got this from broadcastforschools.co.uk, which is a wiki about educational broadcasts on TV over the years. They did some CSS customization for this one. It's usually not this colorful. The basic idea is you have a set of categories at the very top. I don't know if you can see that set of tabs there. And for each one, you can have its own drill down interface, because each one of those categories will have its own set of properties. So already before you even, already before you even click on anything, you can get a little automation, because you can see the nature of the data, the number of pages altogether, the number of pages for each value, I lost the track. I was clicking somewhere else. Yeah. The layout of the data on this wiki, that sort of thing. So then each of those values is a link that you can click on, And then when you do, you get a an interface like the one you see on slide 31. So in here, I just clicked on 1980s for the decade. And now it shows the set of the other filters and a modified number for each one. In each case, the number will be lower. And then below this whole set of filters, there wasn't room in the slide, but at any point, it shows the entire set of pages that correspond to the current criteria, i.e. selected filters. So that list will keep decreasing also. So it's a way of, it's a bunch of information in one. It shows you the layout of the data, and then it's also a way of finding specific pages. If I were interested in finding, everything that was produced by the BBC for ages 11 to 13, in the 1970s and that sort of thing. So this is it's useful for a wide variety of uses, I guess, and it becomes more useful as the volume of data grows. Okay, so that's it. That actually came in at almost exactly the right time, 32 now. The easiest place to find links to all these things is just to the page for Semantic Bundle, just because it has a list of all these extensions, and you can click on each one to get more information about it. And then a shameless plug, it's sort of unnecessary to do this because Peter gave a nice intro to it, but I do have a book on sale that list this and a whole lot of other stuff at workingwithmediawiki.com. So that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Yaron. That's really wonderful. So I guess we move on to the Q&A and open discussion segment of the session. We've got at least like a half an hour, which is great. I'm sure there are plenty of questions there, already a few. People could also bring up the slide deck that I was using a little earlier. And in this segment, there are a few things I would like to discuss. One is, since we are planning to use this new wiki platform for Ontology Summit 2013, which will be launched in January 17. So there's some work between, this PSMW development team as well as the Ontology Summit champions between now and the launch. So we could discuss what can be done, what needs to be done, what are the wish lists, and so on. Of course, in the longer run, we can discuss potential possibilities now that we have this platform. For one, we are not quitting from the current wiki yet. It's served us for 10 years. It's very stable. So we will be doing parallel runs while we hone our skills on the new Ontolog PSMW, as well as get the bugs out. But more importantly, as I described, Ontolog has not been very much of a wiki, doesn't have a strong wiki culture. Over the past 10 years, I remember the time when we had the most active wiki contribution was when we ran the Semantic Wiki mini series, because almost everyone in that community were sort of wiki people, and that during those like 6 or 8 months, we had huge contribution on the wiki. other times we have huge contributions too, not on the wiki, but on, let's say, the mailing list or on the virtual panel sessions and so on, but not so much on the wiki. And I guess past that one, the next best thing we had were the Ontology Summits. So let's hope Ontology Summit 2013 will help us move the culture to a more interactive, participatory, crowdsourcing mentality in terms of getting input from the community. And then I had a few sort of solicitations below. So going into the, I guess almost everyone knows the drill. There's a hand button at the lower right corner of the chat board. So if you're on the call and not on the chat, please join us on the chat now. The link is at the top of your session page. This is a good time to click on the hand button. It will queue you up in the chat room. We had a few queries already from a couple of people who has since had to leave the session. I will ask their questions for them, and since this is archived, they can come back and pick it up asynchronously. So also we depend on people to capture their questions and possibly the answers onto the chat so that it gets archived as well. So when you ask, or before or after you ask questions or make a point, please also capture that onto the chat board. Please click on the hand button now so that I can sort of get people to queue up. Also, when you first recognized, please do a *7 and test your voice. Make sure you're heard before you go on. This is very important. Okay, while we're waiting for people to queue up, I will go through the few queries that were brought up a little earlier. First off, a little earlier, Matthew West asked this very important question. Is, if purple numbers are computed, does that mean the reference for a particular section might change after a page has been updated and thereby invalidate a link that has been made to it? I guess Ken will have a good answer for this. Ken?
Yeah, I think I answered it somewhat in the talk, but let me emphasize it. You can make a link to that particular version of the page, so that will never be invalidated because these earlier versions will always be available. But if you specify a link to if you'd like it to be the link to the current page, well, that of course would always be problematic because when you update the page, whatever it is that you had on that page that you're linking to might cease to be there when you update. That's true now, by the way. The current Ontolog wiki, you could delete a section of the page, and a link to it would of course no longer be meaningful. However, in practice, that wouldn't happen too much because you normally have a particular organizational structure to a page that's basically set when the page is first created, and it's pretty unusual to be doing a wholesale rearrangement of the sections of a page. So in practice, it doesn't really end up being a problem any more than it would be with other kinds of purple numbers. The purple numbers that we're using now don't have this hierarchical feature. But there's another way to deal with it, and that is you can have a link to a table of contents entry, and as long as the table of contents entry doesn't have some kind of special characters and constructs, it can make a It'll construct a URL for it, and as long as that table of contents hasn't been updated, then that would be maintained through all of the versions. So I think that the problem here is not really all that big a problem any more than we have on the Ontolog Wiki right now, and it is, as I say, unlikely that a link would go bad as a result of updates to the page. Okay, Peter, do you have any comment about that?
If I may, I actually would supplement or maybe demonstrate what Ken was just saying. If people are on the VNC, that's great. If you're not, try to go onto the session page for today that is on the Ontolog PSMW. I pasted the link before. I can paste it again on the chat now.
I think Amanda made a comment that it is very common to reorganize and or add sections.
Okay.
Adding new sections wouldn't actually change the hierarchy, wouldn't change the purple numbers. So as long as you stay within the overall structure and just add things, chances are you would not invalidate these links.
Okay, I pasted the link, so if people would click on that link, if you're on the shared screen, that would be better. Now, for example, if I look at, let's say, today's topic, Ontolog PSMW debut tutorial and possibilities, there's a purple number 1B at the end of it. I hope everyone can see that. If you mouse over it, you can actually see what the URI looks like. So it says title, conference call, 2012, 12/19, and then it has ampersand, old ID equals 10278, pound HID 1B. The old ID, 10278 actually is the version number of that particular page. So if you capture this particular purple number now and paste it onto a document or mail it to your friend, your friend clicks on it, it will bring him or her back to exactly this bullet point on this version of the page. So if you updated the page, you actually will not would not matter, because your friend will actually be seeing an older page, an old version of the page, and not the most current version of the page. So how do we get people to look at the current version of the page? That's where Ken was explaining earlier. We could use the table of content. Amanda has already said that on answer for us too on the chat, is that if we let's say if we go onto the table of content, then we can see, for example, agenda. Agenda, if we mouse over that, it also has like pound agenda. If we want to send people agenda and take out the OID, then people will always come back to the new to the most current agenda entry. Of course, one thing that we have discovered, which will be helpful, is that if you mouse over agenda, it's a little too long here, you can't see it, but actually the colon here will not be represented as a colon, but represented as some ASCII code. So the best bet is to leave all your headers symbol free and also keep it stable. So don't change your headers after you've constructed the page. That way you will keep it going very well. And you can refer people back to the exact places, either the current place or the older version of the page. In our experience, there are two sort of main ways to use purple numbers. One is, of course, sending the purple number to anyone or quoting it, citing it in a document. The other use, which is very popular and used all the time, I mean, it's in a synchronous fashion, is when we go onto meetings, when we're in a meeting and we say, oh, let's all go to purple number 1J. So people will just do a page find and do 1J. And if you look at the, if you're on the share screen now, you immediately get to 1J and we say, oh, that's the prepared presentation material and slides. So I can tell people if they all of a sudden they ask, what's the dial-in number? And then I can say, just, go to, 1N4 and I type 1N4 in my search on page and there we go. And even if this is a very long page, one will get to exactly the right place on that page. Hope that answers the question about updating the page and purple numbers. So on the purple numbers won't take you to the wrong place. It'll always take you to the right place. It may not take you to the most current place if you leave the old ID number on. If you leave the old version, if you added that URI and take out the version number, then it'll take you to the current place. And in that case, it's better to use the table of content as your anchor rather than using the purple number, because as Amanda or others point out, if you start inserting paragraphs, then the hierarchical structure of the whole purple number constructs will be wrong. Attila LG asks, I mean, do we mean that a purple number once used will never get used? Depends on what you call a purple number. If you refer to that whole URI, then yes, once it's used, it will not be reused. But if you are just referring to, let's say, 1N4, then no. 1N4 will be used on every page. I mean, every page will start with 1, and then if you have subsections under 1, it will be 1A. If you have subsection under that, it will be 1A1, 1A2, 1A3, and so on. So the purple numbers will get repeatedly used. It's anchored to a particular page. So Attila also asks, if a purple number then provides an immediate tiny URL, that would be wonderful. It does, yes. It does provide that immediate in a synchronous fashion. So,
right. I think it's important to emphasize that the purpose of the purple numbers is to have these anchors, and it it provides them kind of automatically. I mean, you don't have to put them in. I mean, you could always, there's always been this capability of putting anchors in manually, but it's really error prone and difficult.
Exactly.
The purple numbers do this automatically. And of course, the table of contents entries are also anchors that you can use.
Yeah. And on this PSMW, then the purple numbers are not just automatically inserted, but also version controlled.
Right.
Terry, you had a question. You lowered your hand.
Terry?
Terry Longstrap.
Terry, yeah.
Star 7.
Terry, what was your question?
Yeah, this is Terry. I'm a little confused by how you do, how you identify a specific version as opposed to the generic one, which would be the most recent one, and is there any way to aggregate? Can I see all instances of 1N4?
In fact, I mean, this is not us, but I mean, it's a sort of one of the strengths of all wikis. I mean, since Ward Cunningham devised them, all wikis capture every single version. So even if you go to PurpleWiki or if you go to the PSMW now, every page, if let's say our homepage is probably has probably been edited like 1,500 times. I mean, all 1,500 versions are available.
Yeah, that's at the page level.
At the page level. Now,
you were saying that I could get to the specific version of that purple number.
Yes.
If I have the OID in front of it.
Right.
But can I get to a generic version of that purple number? And I heard that I could, and I don't remember quite exactly how you did that. But
if you want the current version, you just remove the OID equals XYZ. If you remove that segment of the URI, then you it'll bring you to the current version.
Okay. Can I see a history of that purple number only?
No, you can see a history of that page.
The pages, yeah.
Yes.
That's overwhelming. Anyway,
But if you go to a particular page, then the page will show all that hierarchical purple numbers all over again.
I understand.
A particular version.
Yeah, I understand that. I just wondered if I could see, you know, all the times we changed that one phrase or that one item.
It's on the database. I guess you have to write some code to show it.
It is on
that would be a really interesting application.
Yeah, there's an SQL backing for all this.
Yes, it, for now.
Okay, yeah. So I could do a query, a select statement.
Right, but as Jeroen was also mentioning now, with Semantic Media Wiki, you can also put the back end in a triple store.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't want to do that.
Okay, your prerogative. Amanda, *7.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm thinking this through, both in combining, you know, what's stable with the forms approach, and trying to think through the process, for example, of how the wiki gets used during the summits, where there tends to be a lot of page revision going on, and a lot of cases where you want to transclude or cross-refer. So I'm thinking that if the table of contents level is what's stable, and it may be the case that some of the cross-reference we do gathers what might normally be a particular form field or collection of form field across a number of pages. So a particular section from, you know, all the different sessions that have occurred or something like this. It might be that to get the most out of this, what we really want to think about is what's the relationship between the table of content sections and the semantically structurable aspects of the pages, and to the extent that we're going to use that. Because we really haven't talked that much about how we plan to use the semantic aspects of it, or the ability to structure pages using that. Half comment and half question, I guess.
Yes, actually, if need be, I am thinking of, I mean, we could do a specific session on how we want to do it for Ontology Summit 2013 with a smaller number of people, maybe three or four people who are actually going to pour themselves into building the wiki for the summit, like last year when Ali and Thomas Getgood got together and produced the website. So we could do a similar exercise, and by then we'll have serve a smaller number of people who are more dedicated and and get together and say what can be done, what are the possibilities specific to Ontology Summit. I think that would be interesting. I mean, I'm trying to find out if the group here, or at least those who are championing Ontology Summit, would want to do it. If so, we probably want to do that before the 17th, before the launch, because once we launch, then content might start pouring in, and we probably want to have the infrastructure ready by then.
So, to what extent in the maybe this is a question for Ken, in the Ontolog PSNW so far, to what extent has an ontology, I think one of your slides referenced to an ontology that's being used so far, and I'm curious about how it's specifically being incorporated at this point.
Well, the ICOM ontology is just mapped to those templates, forms, and categories, as you see. It's we haven't actually finished that because there are issues concerning how you deal with namespaces.
Okay.
But the basic idea is to use this standard. It's not yet a standard, but it's in the process of standardization. This ICOM ontology. And since that ontology was specifically for collaborative work environments, it seemed like a good match. It's also compatible with many other forms and standards associated with collaborative work and in that area. So it seemed like a good way to start. But of course, in the as we bring this up to up to production level in the Ontolog community, and in particular for the Ontology Summit, it would certainly be interesting to discuss what ontologies we would like to have available in the wiki. Perhaps we should have a session where we get just those people who are interested in this area to make the decision about just what ontologies are going to be supported.
Yes, definitely. Also, along this line of thought, I can see Todd has also left, but Todd offline had asked the question, where do we find the ontology? And I gave sort of the book answer, which is, I mean, OOR, of course. Actually, a week or so, two ago, in a meeting with Ken, Mike Dean, Michael Gruninger, Till Moskowski, was Till there? No, Till wasn't, but he later sort of bought into that. And myself, we were there and we say, what can OOR bring to the table this time? And what do we want to get out of the summit? The conclusion is we want the summit to recognize OOR is the go-to place for ontologies, and that it provides the platform for ontology evaluation. That's why, if you notice, I mean, there is some more and more sort of support for doing hackathons and some really hands-on work this summit. And presumably, we could, I mean, if we get the talents and the support, do a few things so that by the end of the session, we will have some sort of interoperability between ontologies on OOR to work with material or content on the PSMW. Of course, that's wishful thinking, but we have to start thinking out loud before it might even happen. So, So that's one thought. Amanda?
No further comment. I'm just looking at the ICOM stuff now.
Yeah. I can provide you with the ontology, if you wish. It's not actually in the documents on that page, but I can provide it in various formats.
That would be very interesting, and a link to it somewhere off of the project or the beta page would be, I think a lot of people would click that. Would be curious.
Yeah, I'll certainly take care of that. Of course, what we would like to have is to have that available at on an OOR,
mm-hmm.
so that it'll be more reliable than just putting it, say, on my homepage. But and of course, we'd like other ontologies as well to be supported. So this is definitely something that we need to have a discussion about. Just, if there are any questions for your own, I think it would be really helpful if you could mention it now, because the resource to go to for Semantic Media Wiki. Anyone?
Yeah, I would. Your own. I mean, thank you for all the great examples. A lot of those were very interesting, but where we can find them is not on your slides. Are they all openly accessible, or some of them are and some of them aren't? You're wrong. Star 7, maybe?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Okay, yes.
Double click. Hi. Yeah, thanks. Yes, all of those came from public wikis. I can send out the URLs of all of those in one way or another. I don't know what the best way to do that would be.
Yes, we've created two pages. I mean, it was on Ken's slides before, to solicit input. One for demos, prototypes, examples. I mean, that we could reference.
Oh, okay.
And the other for issues, bugs, and suggestions. So I'm pasting the links, to the wiki now, so that people could, I mean, of course, we archive this, so when the chat transcript comes out, these links will be available. So I solicit everyone to help populate those, and in particular, your own, if you could maybe put your Susie's shoe example, or maybe links to some of the very the more interesting instances, like, I mean, where the maps were used, the multiple the NRE predicate examples. I mean, those would be great. It's definitely, I mean, it'll take us forever to find them if you don't give us the point.
Yeah.
Actually, all of your examples are interesting.
Oh, yeah, they're absolutely fascinating.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
Thanks for pointing it out, Pirona. The examples I have on my slides are actually incomplete and wouldn't actually work, because I, you know, pulled out some material to try to make it, to show just the essence of it. But you're right, that these were not actually correct.
Okay. Yeah.
So your examples would be much more interesting from the point of view of what the syntax actually is.
Yeah, I guess, yeah, it's helpful to see it so you can look at the source and see how it's done, definitely.
Okay, there's one more question from Steve Ray, who also had to leave, but he says the queries, I guess the syntax, I mean, don't appear to be standard Sparkle. I mean, he was talking about show, and also it also appears that ontology specification language is not standard ones such as Turtle or RDF XML, and maybe Yaron, you have some comments to sort of this question.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, as I mentioned during the talk, yes, to be more explicit about it, Semantic Media Wiki does have its own query syntax, which doesn't correspond to any other querying language. And it gets mapped into either SQL or Sparkle, depending on what the backend data store is. By default, it's MySQL. So it gets mapped into SQL SQL.
Just out of curiosity, is there some effort to sort of leave that step of mapping out and maybe develop the extensions with the standardized syntax?
Well, it's definitely, I would say it's a long-term goal. For the moment, I think the main issue is just that triple stores are so rarely used, that it just doesn't make sense to move things more into that direction. It's probably not more than, I don't know, 1 to 3% of users that are using triple stores. But there are already ways to do direct Sparkle queries from a wiki page if regardless of whether the wiki is using RDF, to either query that wiki's own data or other data sources.
Okay.
And Sparkle has some advantages. Sparkle has more flexibility than Semantic Media Wiki's own querying.
Yeah, that also answers, I believe I don't have it now, but somewhere someone did ask, I mean, whether Semantic Media Wiki's query has its own syntax. I guess
okay,
you answered that, yeah.
Well, I suppose you could have something like a meta template where you just write this one template that would handle all of the various classes that happen to be in your RDF store. Does that make sense, Yaron?
No.
I'm not saying you can do it now. I'm saying it was kind of an interesting.
Are you talking about the template in the MediaWiki sense?
Something like a meta template that, where instead of having one template for every class or every category, you just have a single meta template and it would handle all of the categories at once in a uniform way.
Sorry, I don't understand.
Well, yeah, see, the thing is, if you specify the ontology in RDF in your RDF store, assuming you have a triple store, then you can just do a query to get your classes, and in effect automatically generate all of these templates kind of on the fly from the triple store.
So you're not talking about querying anymore. You're talking about creating an entire data structure, templates, forms, and all that based on a specification?
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of what I'm doing now in mapping the ontology. But I basically have to do any time I want to add a new ontology, or if an ontology goes to a new version, I would have to remap everything. Making it dependent on the RDF store would make this a little bit more flexible.
I'm not sure I understand what you're talking about. I think what you're talking about is there's a specification of the entire data structure, and then you create, you know, things are generated on the fly based on that, the template and form and all that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, there's an extension I didn't mention that is tied into that called page schemas, where you have a single piece of XML for a category, and from that you can modify that, and then from that generate form template properties and all of that. Probably should have mentioned it. That's something that a lot more work could be put into as far as being able to define that. But within RDF, you can't really specify a data structure, can you? I mean, that kind of thing, saying, like, a page about a city should hold a field for population and for country and mayor and all that. Can you do that?
There are ways to do that.
Okay. Well, that would be good to talk about. I don't know if now is a good time to talk about it, but it's something I've been curious about, actually. You know, whether that can be done in the context of RDF, and whether you can make a complete package where you just have a set of RDF and everything else gets generated from that on the wiki.
Right. I can show you something about how that's done.
Okay. Yeah, that'd be very interesting to see.
Yeah, this will be an interesting discussion, but not for today. So possibly in the next session that we're talking about. But I guess we will, Amender, myself, maybe Mike will try to explore that on the Ontology Summit 2013 organizing committee list. Terry Longstreth and Pratik Jain also made a couple of comments. Terry suggested that there may be synergies between Semantic Media Wiki and DOL activity. DOL is the distributed ontology language that's being developed by this ISO ONTO IOP, Ontology Integration and Interoperability Working Group. So we make a note of that. And Pratik, Jane, you said using OWL.
I think he means can define a data structure using OWL, you know, be able to specify a schema. I don't know. I seem to recall having looked into that, and I couldn't find anything for that. I'm definitely not an expert, so there could be something I'm missing. I mean, I know within OWL you can define certain things, like I can't even remember. You know, this sort of value has to be unique. Only one entity can have a value of 5 for this predicate or something like that, but I don't know if you can say you know, if a page is part of the class city, then it has to have exactly this set of relationships, this set of properties.
Yes, this is exactly why we need to engage you. I mean, you have all the skills on developing the extensions. I guess a lot of the people in the ontology community have all the skills on how to sort of make use of an ontology. Again, I mean, not today, but let's try to keep the conversation going and make another time to talk about this. So it's time is running out for us. It has been a great session. So again, going back to my slides, slide number 6 on my deck, we're soliciting ideas on how to make the wiki site more useful, more attractive, and more effective in helping us achieve our mission, whether it's the mission of the Ontology Summit or the mission of the Ontolog community as a whole. So please try to, everyone, please try to enter some, make some contribution to those two pages, the demos pages and the issues pages. We need help and pointers from SMW gurus like your own, definitely, so please stay engaged. And also, I asked your own, and he gave me a couple of pointers, and I followed his pointers and made a post to the media wiki list as well as to the semantic media wiki users and developers list. We need a very creative and experienced UI champion to help us make the Ontology Summit site as pretty as last year's. So if any one of you are, or any one of you know who can sort of turn MediaWiki from its sort of Wikipedia look to a very refreshing, attractive look, please put him or her in touch with us, with me maybe. We need help there on user interface.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, on that note, last chance for comments. If not, allow me to thank our two speakers, Ken and Yaron, for a great session, and we learned so much from both of you today. Thank you very much, and thanks to everyone for joining us, and stay tuned for the next session, which probably will happen sometime between now and January 17th. I doubt if it will happen before the holidays, so it's likely going to be somewhere maybe the first couple of weeks in January. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Aaron.
Bye.